Welcome to Coaching and Cocktails, the podcast.
Well, good morning and hello, and welcome to Coaching and Cocktails, the podcast. This is Tina, and I have yet another special guest with me today because Miss Brandy is still currently working on her kitchen, and so doesn't have that. She's remodeling the kitchen and doing some other things. So I'm just having special guest upon special guest. And this week, I have somebody new with me. As many people know, I have I've had 12 plus, I lose count, surgeries. I have lots of injuries and lupus and all the things that go along with that. So I thought it would be really cool to have a conversation with one of the people who has been instrumental in helping Humpty Dumpty stay put together every time Humpty Dumpty gets broken, as I like to call myself. So I have my own personal physical therapist extraordinaire with us, Dat Cowell. So, Dat, can you introduce yourself and just tell everybody a little bit about you and your background and your business and just
Sure. Let us
know who you are?
Thanks. Thanks, Tina. How long has it been? It's been like 7 years, maybe?
You know, I was trying to go back and figure out when I had my hip surgery. I think that might have been 2016.
Man, 15?
I'm gonna have to go back and look at my notes because I lose count. But yeah, it's been a while, and you helped me recover from that. It was the first time I met you. So Give us a little background on you and what you do.
Sure. So I'm Dat. I've been a physical therapist for over 13 years now. Used to work at a outpatient orthopedic clinic connected to like a larger hospital system. That's kind of where I met Tina and started working with her. And I discovered, you know, I really enjoy working with like the active population, the runners, weightlifters, people that want to, you know, compete and stay, you know, in the game of life. So it wasn't until about 6 months ago that I kind of started my own business called Native Physical Therapy, located in Annapolis, Maryland. You know, personally, I enjoy CrossFit, running, paddleboarding, you know, things that really keep me in the game and keep me active with my two little girls. I specialize in dry needling, manual treatments, but really it's, you know, it's an exercise progression. So, you know, finding the right prescription for each person. And that's kind of where I think I strive in my creativity and working with patients and kind of meeting them where they're at, you know, because everyone's different. So that's kind of the role and mission behind Native Physical Therapy.
So what is the native in Native Physical Therapy for you?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I became a physical therapist, not because, you know, I enjoy like the medical field, but it was the actual skill of something, you know, it's actually having skill and it's, something that's transferable. You know, I can do it anywhere. Anyone needs physical therapy at some point. And I don't have to prescribe medications. I don't have to, you know, indoctrinate people in like the whole surgical procedures. And, you know, so native is coming from within, coming from your own, you know, being able to heal both, you know, with your mindsets, with your approach. And, you know, I think everything is, you know, begins there, and then learning how to, you know yourself and then heal yourself, you know, coming from within. So that's where the term native comes from. And my logo, it's an olive branch. So not only, you know, I think medicine and this journey is a relationship. So not that, you know, I'm dictating and telling you what to do, but it's a piecemeal of, you know, a coming together of between you and me and like the actual process, learning how to get from A to B and kind of meet your goals. So
it's a partnership.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it should be. Always.
Yeah. And very much like I tell my clients all the time, like, I'm not here to dictate what you're going to do or not going to do. I'm here to give you guidance. And then we have to have this open dialogue and this open conversation about what you need, what you're feeling, what's happening, what I think is best and then find that middle ground and what's actually going to work. Because sometimes what's best, what I think is best, I'm sure you have experienced the same, is not actually what's going to work for the client.
Yeah.
Or the patient or, you know, whatever you call it. I love that you said, you know, being that use the game of life. Because I think I told you, like, our whole center stage athletics is coaching for the sport of life, right? So sport, game, yep. We have this concept called life athlete, right? So we coach a lot of bodybuilders, but we also coach a lot of your average, I don't want to say average, everybody, nobody's average, right? But your soccer moms and your just women who just want to feel better in their lives, never caring to get on stage and just, you know, feel better. And so, but it's all, like you said, it's mental, right? We use, it is a sport. Life is a sport. And if you treat it as such and you apply the same kind of principles to it and you kind of go through your life in that respect. So I think it was cool because I think we have kind of a similar philosophy in terms of that. And I like the native from within too, right? I think that in the olive branch, I think that's all very cool. I actually didn't know that. I didn't know that that's I kind of assumed that's what the native was. And I think your Instagram, is it Native Runner?
Yeah, Native Runner PT. Yep.
Okay. So you do a lot of running, right? Are you're really into
I enjoy races, yeah. Races. I enjoy signing up for races. I'm kind of in my quiet period now where I'm more lifting and doing the CrossFit thing. But I sign up for races to keep me accountable, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just fun, you know, especially after COVID. I really miss that community of runners. It's so positive, like bodybuilding, right? Like you're just cheering each other on, you're, you know, celebrating each other, you're helping each other out, you're clapping hands for each other. I mean, it's such a bringing together of people and mindset and just a big party, you know, like mm-hmm. That's life, right? You
know, you gotta and community is so important. I mean, it's just something I'm actually, community and connection, I think, is really important, just, you know, and whether it's mental or physical health. And I think finding a community, whatever that is, whether it's running or bodybuilding or CrossFit or music or art or whatever your thing is, right? Like having some kind of community, I think, is really important. But yeah, that's cool. That's why I like it too. Although it's good to, I've enjoyed expanding my community because it was like bodybuilding was the only community I had for a really long time. And I was like, oh my God, is there anything outside of this world? Right. So, having a little diversity there. So I remember, one of the reasons, you know, something that really drew me to you as a physical therapist, because I remember right after my hip surgery, I think I met with somebody else because in this practice where, you know, that you used to work in, which is where all my orthopedic surgeons work. I have a cornucopia of orthopedic surgeons in the same practice. But I remember, I think right after my surgery, I saw somebody else in the practice. I think it was my very first, whatever it was, like right after the hip surgery. Sure. And it felt like this was one of those people that was used to dealing with elderly population of like maybe recovering from hip surgery and stuff. And it was a lot of like, don't do, you shouldn't do, like this, take it easy. And I get that there is an element of that, but I remember, and I don't know if that was just who was available for my first appointment, but my second appointment was with you. And, you know, I'm always really open and honest with every physical therapist I've ever worked with. And I'm like, I'm an athlete and I need to get back to work, right? Like this is just a bump in the road for me. So how are we going to get there? And you know, I'm famous for saying, and I don't understand like pain tolerance. So I actually need some, because I have such a, because I'm injured and I'm hurt all the time. I'm like, I need somebody to tell me like, if it hurts, do I keep going? Or if it hurts, do I stop? Or is some discomfort okay, right? Because I think even when you were helping me with stretching, like a couple weeks ago when I came to see you, and I was like, and you're stretching me, I'm like, yeah, that hurts really bad. And you're like, well, you gotta tell me when it hurts. But I'm just so used to doing those things. So I appreciate that you work to help that you like working with athletes. That's what drew me to you, because I wasn't interested in somebody telling me what I couldn't do. Right. So sure. I needed somebody to tell me, okay, what can I do? How are we going to get me back to work? And then kind of like helping me through that more than, because I think that there is this prevalency, it's probably a bad word, this, that as soon as I feel pain, I'm just not supposed to do something. My back hurts. Right. Well, then I shouldn't do whatever. My knees hurt. That's a famous one. My knees hurt. So I'm not going to, so I can't run or whatever, right? That pain is, I'm not saying pain is never an indicator that something's wrong and you should stop it. But I think, you know, we were going to talk a little bit today about, I just kind of heard this concept when I was listening to the David Goggins and Huberman podcast, right? The hurt versus harm. Yeah, I think that was the hurt where I heard the term hurt. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the one where I heard the term hurt versus harm. And hurt being, yeah, there's pain, there's physical pain or there's physical discomfort. Harm being, is there an actual injury or am I injuring myself further by continuing to work through the pain? I think, right? So I think
sure. It
doesn't, hurt doesn't always mean there's an injury that's going to be exacerbated by what you're doing physically. At least right. That's how I sort of interpreted the hurt versus harm. For example, I mean, I can use myself as an example. I have a lot of joint pain from lupus. It hurts. I'm not actually doing more physical harm in my physical endeavors, right? My weight training and things like that. In fact, I'm doing myself a disservice if I stop moving just because I hurt, right? So I'm not working out on broken legs. I'm not David Goggins. I promise I will never run on broken legs, right? Like that's, and I'll never run. If I'm running, just look to see what's chasing me because running's not my thing. But yeah. That's kind of my point, right? Like, so I think a lot of people, and yes, again, I'm not saying that pain is not a signal from the body that says, pain is a signal from the body that says stop most of the time. But, you know, it's this evaluation. Is it, for me, if I were to stop moving, I can tell you the pain is much worse.
Yes. Yeah.
So I keep moving so that the pain doesn't get worse, but my pain does not mean I'm causing more physical harm. Does that makes sense to you, right? Like that's kind of what you and I were chatting about last time I saw you, at least in my mind, that's what we were chatting about. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's always various degrees, and it's hard to say, like, am I hurting myself further if I keep going? I always give my patients like a set of rules, you know, especially for runners. You know, if you're running and it hurts a little bit and then it goes away, well, yeah, that's the type of pain that maybe it was a little stiff, or maybe, you know, it was just something I had to work out. And that's fine. You know, sometimes it does take a little bit of movements and warming up to kind of get things going to the right position or just kind of get your form right. Mm-hmm. Pain that comes on and starts to change the way you run or change your movement. Well, maybe that's where I have to, instead of running that day, maybe I'm walk running. So that's kind of your, you know, there might be something there that might be a little bit of a strain. Maybe you went a little bit hard. So it's just finding that degree of activity that can keep you moving, but not necessarily generate pain. Now, if you're running or doing something and it really changes your way that you do everyday life, going up and down the stairs, picking up your kids, that's when you should probably ask for some advice. Maybe a physical therapist or maybe orthopedist. Someone that kind of has some sort of degree and background to say, hey, you know, you should do something about this. And if it, you know, when it's, and then there's totally broken, right? Like that's the type of pain where, you know, I can't do anything anymore. I got to use crutches. Got to go to the ER. You know, that's another type of pain. That's your emergency room type pain.
Where there's a pop, a searing pain, a bone sticking out. you know, something along those lines, or a pain that gets progressively worse over time, even with modification, or even, I guess, without modification, because not everybody's going to modify, right?
Oh, yeah. I can help you when it's stage two or three, right? Like, it hurts, I change the way I run, it feels better, or it hurts and it lingers for a little bit longer than it should. I could definitely help you within about, you know, a 10, 15 minute consult. We have some sort of idea what's going on, how to modify it, you know, what could be causing it. Or do you need to seek further, you know, addressing, imaging or whatever. Once it kind of gets to that point where you're like, I got to go see a doctor or something about it, you know, for someone's head, if that's the case, then that's going to take much longer. You know, that's kind of where you have to do something about it. And it used to be, rice, rest, ice, compression, elevation, mm-hmm. You know, I like to take the R out and put in active movement, you know, some okay. sort of activity that is going to improve it, get fluid going to it, get blood flowing to it. That's where the magic is, you know. That's where, you know, someone comes to me with like a acute injury. Yeah, rest it, but really keep it moving, you know, because it's that stiffness that's really going to cause the irritation or the prolonged healing. Say tendon injuries. It used to be that, you know, you rest it and you don't do anything to it until the, you know, pain goes away. Well, now the research shows like, hopping on a bike for 10 minutes, doing something light to kind of keep it moving, really generates the, you know, the flow of fluid, the flow of blood to it to help the healing process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's various PTs specialize in different things. I mean, honestly, when you graduate PT school, you're a generalist. Like, you can go in any direction. You can go work in women's health. You can go work with babies. So a lot of PTs kind of graduate that, and that's kind of it. And that's their background, that's their knowledge. But there are PTs that specialize. So, you know, I specialize in orthopedics and sports. So, you know, having that background gives me a little more insight about, all right, how can I treat the injured athlete, which is much mm-hmm. different than treating grandma with a total hip replacement, right? But yet the education can be the same. So, you know, when I don't blame the PT, it's just like their background knowledge and finding the right patient with the right physical therapist is so important. Just finding like the right doctor or finding the right coach, mm-hmm. you know, for the right sport is highly, highly important, you know, especially for your goals. So that's kind of how I view pain. And a lot of people kind of get into the mindset, all right, I'm injured, I can't do anything. Well, what's the next best thing you could do? Like, what's the next thing that you could do to keep you moving? So for you, it was like a non-weight bearing hip injury. Well, can I row? Yeah, you can row. Or can I do upper body work? Yeah, as long as you kind of stay within these protocols, right? Like, every surgeon has a protocol about how they want to heal the hip. And with yours, it was it's tough. It's like 6 weeks, non-weight bearing, and slowly progress it. And there's certain
I
motions you can't
do. I thought I was going to lose my ever-loving mind the 6 weeks that I was on crutches, and I couldn't. I'm so used to, my husband calls me a cricket because, like, in the kitchen, I'm like, I'm just fast. I'm just like, I'm doing a ton of things. You can't be fast doing anything in the kitchen while you're hobbling around on crutches, or I'm like, and then I'm pushing the limits because then I'm hopping around on one foot, and I'm probably, which is easier than hopping around on crutches. And then I'm probably at risk of, like, well, at some point I might trip and lose my balance and put my leg down, but I sort of push the limits. I remember when I was finally allowed to do like no tension on my spin bike.
Yeah.
It was the most boring thing you could possibly imagine. Cause I mean, you're talking about like pedals that like you could just like spin them with your pinky finger, right? Like you just, but yeah. it for me, because I'm so used to movement, if I could, there was no way I was just going to sit for 6 weeks, right? Like I was like, I've got to find a way to move my body. So yeah, like you said, so either I was doing some upper body work, or when I was able to no tension spin on my spin bike, you know, it was anything to just get my blood moving. Because for me, and you may feel the same way, we talked a little bit about the mental aspect of it, right? Like the within, that's sort of my drug, that's my dopamine hit, right? So without it, yeah, I think life feels a whole lot harder for me if I'm not getting some. And I'll share, and I know I've shared this in podcasts before, like I used to be very black and white and all or nothing, right? So when I was in the throes of my bodybuilding career, when I hit my first patch of injuries, which was I started competing in 2005, and I competed too much and I did too much too soon, and I wrecked my body, and I ended up with a torn bicep at both ends, right? So distal and in my shoulder. Oh. So, and then I ended up with back-to-back surgeries in 2007 for a torn bicep at the elbow, torn by slap repair at the shoulder, all in the same arm, of course. And I did nothing for a year. And then I went into a severe depression and I gained a ton of weight because I was in this mindset of like, well, I can't lift like a bodybuilder, so I can't do anything. It was all in my shoulder. I could have been walking on the treadmill. I could have walked my neighborhood. I could have done anything, but I just had this mindset. I was so all or nothing. And so it was kind of getting through that and sort of making my way back by 2009 to the stage. And then realizing that, like, I went through that pretty serious depression and the surgeries and stuff and sort of lost my identity as a bodybuilder and mentally was just in a really bad place. And then I started to realize as I started to move my body again after about a year and that I felt better. And it was that in all of that, that I realized I was like, okay, like mentally I need to be moving, period. It doesn't have to be the way I think it's going to be. You can't have all or nothing black or white mentality. Cause I think a lot of people fall into that. Well, if I can't run, I won't do anything, right? Versus do a run jog that day, or versus just do a walk that day, or versus do yoga that day, right?
Sure.
And now at least, you know, I've learned so much over the years, you know, since getting back in 2009 and I've had so many more surgeries and stuff. Now I know. I'm just like, okay, well, whatever I can do is what I'll do, right? Like if it's not what I want to. And there are days even I go out into my garage gym and I'm like, I can't mentally, I want to do so much more than physically my body like will let me do on that given day. And I'm like, okay, well, I can't do what I want to do mentally is lift this weight and do these things. And I'm like, physically, I'll just get on the treadmill. Like this morning, I was like, well, I'm just walking on the treadmill this morning. I can't do what I mentally want to do, but I can do something. Right. Yeah. And because I know that that's going to be better than nothing. But anyway, so that was just kind of a long, you know, winded story about getting that kind of recovery for me and realizing that I was so happy to get on that stupid spin bike with no tension. I was just, you know, and I'm not a good patient. I mean, I don't know how much of a hard time I gave you. I'm pretty sure I gave you a hard time on more than one occasion. I was like, I can't do this. I'm not going to do it this way. I was always but I used to be able to, and you know, and I'm like, yeah, well, Tina, you can't do it anymore. So, right. Was I that horrible?
Yeah.
Was I really?
No, I wouldn't say horrible. You were challenging. And this is what it takes, you know, like you have to challenge the medical professional. Like we get in such a routine and in such a high volume setting, you're seeing 14 to 16 patients a day. I mean, you just get burnt out. This is, you know, this is the medical field. This is like dealing with people's injuries and lives and livelihoods. But, you know, the doctors see it and we see it a lot. The PAs, you know, we just get, I don't know what happened to the medical system, but that's kind of where we're at. We kind of treat patients in as a number, and you kind of get in the mindset like, well, this is the surgery, this is what you have to do, and you and I am the professional and you are the patient, this is what you need to do. When you get challenged, I mean, it makes us think, like, is it really that the case that this has to be the way? Even now with the 6-week non-weight bearing protocol, like, well, yeah, there are people doing research out there say, can we just do 2 weeks, you know? You used to have to wear a brace after the hip surgery, after labral surgery, and now you don't, because, you know, the orthopedic group that we're referring to, I mean, they're fantastic. Like, they really I wouldn't, are. Like, I love my kids doctors. Go there. They're great doctors. I mean, I love working with them. I mean, they, like, my daughter, she broke her arm 4 weeks ago, and I was able to get her in, and she's getting her cast off tomorrow. So, you know, I mean, they're like such a great group. And the reason I like them all is because they're all active people. You know, they bike and row and run, you know, and so they understand, you know, the athlete, and that's kind of their the you know, the way we progress things. So, you know, if I had never got that challenge, I'd never say, like, yeah, is this the way we should do it? You know, are we is this protocol like the way it should be? And we've done updates of protocols over the years, you know, done the research and say, like, what are other people doing? You know, is that okay? Mm-hmm. So,
and then shouldn't it be dependent on the person, on the patient too, right? I mean, you know, there's all kinds of protocols like in the functional medicine realm too, right? Like, oh, well, if you have this gut issue, then this is the protocol. Take these supplements and do this thing. And I can't do a protocol as a coach. I can't do the same protocol for every single client that I work with. I have to understand that particular client and then develop a strategy, right? Like, I don't like protocols. I mean, I get that, you know, you're always going to have this average, like, after labral surgery, 6 weeks, blit, blit, blit. But then there has to be somebody that's able to look at that and go, okay, does this make sense for this patient?
Yeah. Yep. Someone who's really active, who has a good metabolic system, like, yeah, the bone's going to heal faster, you know? It's not going to take the 8 weeks that it takes grandma, because, you know, it's just naturally, that's the way it goes. But someone that, and there is some truth to protocol. Like, you know, if you have an ACL tear and you had the surgery, it does take time. You know, you could get repeat MRIs to see the healing process, but, you know, it does take a full year to get back to sport. Because that's when you're going to see, like, the healing take place and the tendon become strong enough. So, you know, there is some background to that. But other protocols, like, you know, it used to be like, all right, anterior hip replacement, you can't do A, B, and C. And now it's like, you could, but, you know, let's eliminate the extreme movement. Because when you tell someone that you can't do A, B, and C, well, they become really scared about moving it at all. So, you know, but you tell them, you know, just don't do crazy yoga moves. They're like, oh, yeah, I get it. So it's how you pitch it. It's how you put it out there. And it's helping the patient understand, like, what is safe and what's not safe. So
I think that's why I would always say, okay, I need to know what not to do. Like, like, tell me the extreme. Absolutely, positively, don't do this.
Yeah.
But what? So I like, give me like, I need a range. Like, I need, give me the wiggle room. Like, what can I do that maybe isn't advisable, but if I'm careful, I could. And then what is the drop dead? Like, absolutely do not do this, right? That kind of thing. Like that, at least that's how I am. And at least I think that's probably how a lot of athletes would be versus, and I think there is a different mindset. Don't you think, like, that I would say a lot of true athletes, that is going to be the mindset, and versus people who are, I hate using average, but your average person, your weekend warrior, who's just like, I'm going to go out, you know, for a jog or trying to lose weight, right? Or something along those lines, trying to get physically active for the first time. And they're like, oh, well, my knees hurt. I can't do it. Right. Or, oh, well, that hurts. I can't do it. So I shouldn't, right? Using it more as like using that as a crutch or an excuse to almost to not get the movement.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, my favorite videos, reels on Instagram are like grandma bodybuilding, right? Like, you're 80 old, like, picking up heavy stuff and keeping moving and staying flexible and staying active. Because those are my heroes. Like, those are the ones that they've seen it all, they've done it all, and no one's gonna tell them to stop, right? They're almost breaking barriers and conditioning, things that you know, society will tell us, like, that's not supposed to be. You're supposed to get older and weaker and not do those things anymore.
Yes, Fuck that.
Yes.
I want to break all the barriers, right? And my grandmother was the same. And it's so funny because she was in her 80s and she continued to, she got heart conditions, you know, knees hurt, like everything's like swelling up on her. And yeah, so, and truly because she had like actual heart failure and, you know, fluid on her lungs and stuff, in and out of the hospital. This woman was in and out of the hospital. She'd get out of the hospital after her LASIK treatment and come home and mow the grass.
Wow.
With a walking mower, right? Or push mower, not walking mower.
Yeah.
You know, and my grandfather was the same way. He couldn't walk. He had neuropathy and he couldn't really feel his legs and stuff anymore. But I can tell you, I went to the gym with that man and he would get out of his wheelchair and climb onto a piece of equipment. And, you know, because he knew we could still use his upper body. He did everything he could to like keep his upper body strong and he would try to keep his lower body strong because yep. He knew it was only going to be worse if he wasn't. And we used to fuss right. at my grandmother about, you've got to rest. You got to sit down. And we just got to a point where it was like, well, she did pass away, but it was like, if the woman passes away pushing a lawnmower because that's what she enjoys, then yeah. that's going to be it, right? Like we have to, I think you and I were talking too about like this whole concept of like longevity. If you don't move it, you will lose it, right? Totally. Like it gets worse. It gets worse for me if I don't move. It gets worse for us as we get older if we don't move. Like I have a relative who had two hip replacements, one right after the other. The hip replacements were necessary because of lack of movement, right? It was probably a little bit of like, oh, this, I'm sitting all the time. My hips hurt. My hips kill me if I sit all the time. Like, it is the worst thing I could do. Yeah. And so then it gets worse. So I do less and less. Hips hurt worse and worse. Now the pain is just excruciating. Finally nice. Go to the doctor and, oh, well, you need two hip replacements. Well, had you maybe kept moving 5 years beforehand instead of sitting for the last 5 years, that might not be where we are, right? Because had you kept those joints active, then we get two brand new hips. If I had two brand new hips, I would be thrilled. So I don't want to necessarily go through a hip replacement surgery, but if I have to, I will, and I will be thrilled to have new hips. So, and then this relative just still doesn't move. And it makes me fucking bonkers that like you have this literally this renewed life.
Yeah.
There's no pain there anymore. No pain. You can't possibly have pain. You have two brand new hips, right? And and the source of the pain is gone. And it's, I can see the stiffening. I can see the sitting. Yeah. And it's just like, wow, what was all that for? And that point you made about scaring people into not doing things.
Yeah.
That was exactly what was happening during recovery, right? I was like, I just kept saying, like, that's not what the doctors mean, right? Like, it does not mean, like, you're supposed to get up and walk around the house, right? No. Should you be squatting all the way down? No, they said don't squat all the way down, right? Like, you shouldn't be squatting. You should be getting up out of your chair and moving around as much as possible with your walker, you know, whatever the case was, you know, during the recovery process. But, man, I can't even tell you, like, it just makes me crazy to see people waste their bodies.
I think there's like a huge mental aspect in that, you know, I mean, when you said yourself, like the mental challenges that you went through, going through injuries, you kind of have to shift your perspective in how you see yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a time even for myself where I just didn't like myself, you know? I didn't work out as much. I couldn't get out there. I was a new parent, you know. I'm working a job that you know is challenging me mentally, physically. I became a supervisor. You know, no one tells you how to be a supervisor. You just kind of like, you're a good PT, and all of a sudden like people like you, and you're like, here you go.
You should supervise people too. Yeah, that's a whole other conversation about like people who are good at their jobs just being thrown into being, you know, management material just because you're good at your job. But anyway.
So, I mean, I there was a time where I just didn't like myself. My wife could tell me, like, sometimes I just didn't even take showers for like a week just because I just didn't you know, feel like I deserved it. You know, I just felt like if I worked out, yeah, I could take a shower then. But yeah, it was a struggle. And I think COVID kind of made it more challenging because, you know, you're so isolated. So not having that community, and that's why I push it so much now for both people that are injured and not injured. Because, you know, there are people that will challenge you to do better things. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you see, there's a guy at my gym, and, you know, he's such a good shape. And as a CrossFit athlete, like, really killing it. And I always make the excuse, well, he doesn't have kids, you know, or he's younger than me. He does have kids, you know. And we're the same age. Mm-hmm. There's no excuse. So seeing it done by someone else will mm-hmm. push me to do and be better. And so it starts there, like just learning how to take a look at yourself, give yourself grace, take some time and you know, really challenge your views, you know, of being undeserving, you know. Mm-hmm. And we always take better care of other people than we take care better care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Especially those who are coaches, mentors, moms, dads. And it's like that, you know, that airplane.
Put your mask thing. On before anybody else.
Totally. Totally. And healthcare professionals, we're so bad at it. We're so mm-hmm. bad at it. One, advocating for ourselves, you know. And then two, we're so in tune to. Even my wife, she's a speech pathologist, right? She wasn't feeling well. I was like, why don't you just take the day off? She's like, but I have this eval and this patient that really needs to get in and he hasn't had like two good sessions straight together. I was like, how are you going to take care of that person? You can't take care of yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a process, you know, we're still kind of going through it. And there's no right answer, you know, mm-mm. And there's no way to kind of go through it. So, you know, for those people who don't see it, you know, it's hard for them to get moving for whatever reason. Maybe they don't value it, their mindset's different. And that's where I think coaching, and it's hard to change people unless they're ready to change.
Oh, yeah.
So for people like that, as much as I can push it, and even for my parents, like it's hard to tell them to stay active. They're not people that work out or exercise. And I know, like, it's a challenge. And the only way I saw them actually get moving, it was because, you know, I was getting married and my dad wanted to look good. My mom wanted to look good. And so, I mean, that started them on a different journey and, mm-hmm. you know, they started to feel better after they do it. Now it's a little different. Now it's kind of like, they feel like they're getting older. So, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time to change that mindset too. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with that. But with the joint issue, I mean, going back to that, like runners don't get knee replacements. I mean, they do, but compared to the general population, it's like 5% of runners maybe get knee replacements compared to the general population who, you know, it's somewhere between like 10-15% that will eventually get a knee replacement, you know, if you take like the total amount of people that do.
Why is that?
So,
is it because runners are using their knees and their knees are staying quote unquote healthier than
a sedentary person
who's not?
Yeah. I've looked into this research, like what causes arthritis. There's a whole book written on it. And there's really no A, B, and C that causes arthritis. You know, you divide it to rheumatoid, which is an autoimmune disease. People have rheumatoid factors. Their body's attacking the joints. Mm-hmm. Then you looked at osteoarthritis, which they call wear and tear. Things that will cause that, you know, prior injury is probably the biggest factor. Body mass index is the other factor. So mm-hmm. the bigger you are, the more likely you'll have a knee replacement or something. But other than that, there's no other factor, you know, and there has to be some underlying inflammation, you know, there has mm-hmm. to be something that's driving that joint inflammation. And there's no research that shows that. There's no research that's against that either. So, you know, what causes joint inflammation and why is it that more developed countries have more of these joint issues. You don't see plantar fasciitis in India or Vietnam as much, but here it's huge. You know, there's some underlying inflammation, or because of diet, your standard American diet, your SAD diet. You know, that
SAD
that
is the that. SAD is the right acronym for the standard American diet. That's for for damn sure. But you're 100% right. I mean, and if you really look at the data, in wealthy countries versus, you know, less developed countries or what have you, the obesity rate, just the health issues, the cardiac issues, the chronic diseases, all of those things. And that's what it comes down to, right? And it doesn't mean that everybody with a shitty diet is going to have a knee replacement. It also doesn't mean people who have a really healthy diet won't need a knee replacement, right? It's just, so there are genetic factors involved. There's autoimmune factors involved and different types of, you know, joint diseases and things like that. But the best thing you can do for yourself is to have movement of lifestyle. Some sort. And eat healthfully, right? And then the mental aspect, because, you know, all of it, I think really it all comes down to mindset, and being able to do those other things really does come down to, because like you said, like, do you value it? And if you don't, why don't you value it, right? So that just takes a lot of introspect on your own part and kind of figuring out, like, and, you know, low-grade depression, you know, serious depression, you know, those things can really hinder. But also I would say every scientific study or anecdotal or otherwise that says the absolute best thing you can do for depression is movement.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's nothing to dispute that.
Right.
Would you agree? Have you ever seen anything that disputes that?
Even my last primary care follow up. Yeah, because we talk about it, you know, I was on antidepressants for maybe like 6 months, and my last primary care follow up, she's like, oh, how you doing? You know, I was like, oh, I started CrossFit 3 times a week. She put down, yeah, that you probably feel much better. You know, your mood's probably better. And my wife tells me all the time, like, you know, so we prioritize it. Like, all right, you're going to Orange Theory at what time? Great, I'll have the kids. And then you go to CrossFit these days, I'll have the kids. And then, you know, only in the last year, I'd say, like, we do that for each other, where we prioritize that time and make each other do it. Because then we're better people, we're better parents, we're better spouses, we're better, you know, medical practitioners. That's kind of where we prioritize our movement. And I see it in you too. I mean, you every day. You know, even on your last Instagram post about, hey, you know, like, not feeling good, not doing good, choose your heart, right? Choose your challenge for the day. And when you prioritize, is that, like, even just 20 minutes, you know, like, just go out for a walk. I mean, it really does change your mental aspect.
Well, and sometimes you have to force it, right? The reality is, and, you know, we've done umpty dump podcasts on motivation, right? So it's, you know, people, your motivation has to be intrinsic. It's not, it has to, you know, be something that, like, I'm doing this for my health, or I'm doing this because I have to. Like, I move because I have to, right? I know, and not because somebody's got a gun to my head, but I know that, I mean, well, mortality has a gun to my head, right? So. Yes. That's how I look at it. It's no different than brushing my teeth for me. It is just, you know, do I want to keep my teeth? You know, my dentist always says, you know, only brush the teeth you want to keep. Right? It's like, only move the body that you want to keep. It's kind of that same thing. But I also know that, like, it just, I know for me to feel even halfway okay, even on my shittiest days, if I'm not moving, it's way worse. And because I have been through that depression, I've seen both sides of it. And it sounds like you have too, right? Like, you kind of go through that really dark period and you see what the difference is and how much better that is. But yeah, if you're not challenging yourself to do something, and it doesn't have to be, like, I'm not asking people to squat 200 pounds. I'm not asking anybody to go to Orange Theory or CrossFit or anything, right? Like, go for a 2-minute walk around your block. Get up and, you know, do a couple laps in your house. I've been known to do that, right? It's just, you know, I just posted this goofy little, I don't know, it's some little cartoon TikTok thing where, you know, like a voiceover. I keep getting these, it's this little cartoon like thing. And it's just like somebody saying, I don't feel well today. I posted this on my team page so my clients could see it. And it was like a therapist couch, little cartoon. I didn't feel well today. And the therapist like, well, did you go outside today? No. Did you drink water today? No. Did you go meet with it? Were you around anybody today? No. Did you eat healthy today? No. Did you get enough sleep today? No. Oh, wait, I did get enough sleep. And then it's just like all the things that, because the person was like, I don't feel good today. Well, did you do anything to feel good today?
Right.
Right. To the things that are supposed to help you feel good today.
Did you show yourself some love?
Did you show yourself some love? Yeah.
I mean, any of that. Like, did you do anything to take care of yourself?
Mm-hmm. Because self-love isn't, it's not selfish, right? Or self-care is not selfish.
Yes.
To me, it's a necessity. It really is. They put your own mask on before you put anybody else's. And good Lord, I can't deal with the playing the martyr with people anymore. Yeah. And the I'm too busy and I'm too important and this, that, and the other thing. And I'm just like, nope, you're not too busy and you're not too important.
We've both been there, you know?
Nope. Well, and, you know, a comment that somebody always used to say to me is, well, I don't know how you do it all. And I'm like, the only way I do it all is because I do it all.
Yeah.
I couldn't do all the things I do if I wasn't doing all the things I do,
yeah.
If that makes sense, right? Like, it's getting up every morning in my routine and working out in some way, right? It is eating a certain way every day. It is doing certain things in my routine. That is what keeps me able to do all the things that I do, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, you have systems. Like, you have, yeah, like, routines and systems, and really the mental challenge with any type of new activity or even like getting the intrinsic motivation. Sometimes you don't have motivation. So, but I have a system set up. I know I'm going to, you know, I go to CrossFit at Friday at 5:15, and that's just what I do. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to think about it. I just go, you know, and that's the beauty of it. There's a coach there and there's a workout that you have to do and go through it. And you feel better, and you know, you just have a system set up sometimes.
But let me ask you this. Let me stop. I don't mean to interrupt you. So,
yeah,
because we've both had to kind of like break out of a depression and get into create these systems, right? Create these habits.
Yeah.
How did you make yourself go to that first CrossFit class? Because now now you love it, and now it's who you are and what you do. But before, it was who you are and what you did.
Yeah.
What was the mindset in that? Did you have to fight yourself to go? Did you plan it a couple times and not go? Or did you just set your intention? Didn't really want to go, but you're like, I said I'm going to go, I'm going to go. Like, what was it for you? How'd you get there the first time?
So over the summer, I had trained for a few races. So the Annapolis 10 miler I do every year as a medical runner. And then I did the Bird in Hand half marathon, which is in September. So I always kind of played around with CrossFit. You know, I went to a couple of like just sweat workouts with 12 laborers in Annapolis. And, you know, I had a coworker that went there. So it was kind of easy to see. But I was always so motivated. You know, it was something that, like, you know, I haven't played with the barbell in a long time. And I was like, you know, I used to miss that. So as a runner, you know, I noticed that I was okay, you know, I wasn't necessarily thriving, I wasn't necessarily getting better. And then doing the half Bird in Hand half marathon, which, if you ever get a chance, I mean, it's up in Pennsylvania over by Lancaster. It's run by the Amish, and the Amish will run it in full Amish regalia. But then I saw like all these older people running by me in the half marathon. I'm like, duh, you got to get your shit together. You know? You're getting old and slow, man. So I was looking at different things and, you know, always dipped my toes in it, but never really fully committed. And I was like, what if I did? What would it be if I fully committed? If I was 85 in my deathbed and looking back at my life, and I was 41 again, what do I do differently? Hell yeah, I would do CrossFit. You know, mm-hmm. I would just show up embarrassed, a beginner mindset, and just do it. So even that first time I went to the CrossFit gym, Coach Eric, you know, it was finding someplace new. It was, you know, like, what do I do about this parking situation? And it was really scary, but you know, you show up and the community there is so welcoming. Hey, you know, welcome, you know, this is what we do. Everyone like introduced themselves. It was a very kind of like, I missed that when working out with people, even going to the gym. I mean, that's such a challenge. And it's so intimidating sometimes when you walk around and see people lifting weights, like no one's talking to each other. Everyone has headphones on, but in this community, yeah, like people help each other out. You got a coach watching you, you know, you're going to have like a good workout. You modify it if you need to, and they show you like how to modify it. And even then I was like, do I belong here? You know, it took like the coach texting me again. It's like, hey, you know, I hadn't seen you in a while. Like, what's up with that? I was like, you know what? Let's do it. You know? So I committed 3 times a week and I did it, you know, just kind of keep going. And all of a sudden I see the new guy and I remember myself there and I welcome him. And it's mm-hmm. such like a wonderful microcosm of community and people pushing you to do better and be better. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. And I think it's so important. And it's you know, concept that I'm always preaching, especially to like new clients and stuff. It's like just one thing. Right. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Brittany Runs a Marathon. It's one of that. We used to play it at our retreat every year because it's such a shining example of just one thing. You got to take one step, right? You got to, what'd she do? She ran one block and it was fucking miserable and she hated it. Right. And it first. And then the next time you go a little further and the next time you go a little further. Right. And so, but it's just one thing. We don't have to do all the things at once. Right. I don't ever ask a client to like drink all the water, get all the sleep, go to the gym 5 days a week and meditate 5 days a week and eat all the vegetables and the fruit and change their diet and do everything all at once. That's insanity. And it's a recipe for disaster. Right. So we have the habit stack and we kind of, like I say, start small to build big. You have to take these little baby steps. I have this really cool meme that's like a picture of two ladders and it's one with like little rungs that are like, I mean, in the picture, right? They're like a half an inch apart, right? It's a whole bunch of little rungs. And then there's ones that are like, the rungs are like 10 feet apart it's like the little person at the bottom. And it's like, okay, which one of these are you going to actually be able to get up more quickly, right? You do this one little step at a time versus like trying to get, I can't even get to the first rung because I've set that bar so high. And right, I'm just like, okay, like get, if you're only getting 2,000 steps a day, why don't we try to get 3 tomorrow, right? If you only drink 60 ounces of water today, let's try to do 70 tomorrow, right? Or we just focus on one thing and then all those little successes. So that first time you went was probably really hard and really uncomfortable. Yeah. And even maybe the second, third time you went was probably still not super comfortable, but you started to be like, okay, well, I did this once. So the second time wasn't as scary, and maybe the third time wasn't as scary. And then it, you know, but if you don't ever take that first step, and I love what you said about like, if I'm 85-year-old Jat sitting in my deathbed, what would I want my 41-year-old self to do? Right. Yeah. Like what would I do? Like I'm so much more afraid of not doing something and wishing I had than doing it and failing at it or feeling a fool or, you know, it goes back to like, choose your heart. You got to make yourself uncomfortable every single day in some way, right? Do something you don't want to do. That's the only way to build resiliency. And it is the way that you build habits. Cause you don't know unless the only failure is just not trying. And then before you know it, it does become who you are. I've been, you know, I can use myself as an example, but you know, I've been training since I was 21 years old. So 30 years now. So is doing that hard for me? No, like that literally is just who I am, right? Drinking water is the same thing. I don't ever get less than like a gallon and a half, if not, you know, 2 gallons of water a day. And I fight with clients all the time that won't drink their water. And I fight with clients that, like, you know, refuse to like really develop healthy sleep habits. It's a constant fight for on a lot of things, but it really, it's just, you know, doing that one little thing, one small thing at a time. Because sure. I'm sure when you first started running, it probably did not come naturally to you. I don't know anybody who their first run was like, that was the best thing I ever did. Everybody who runs for the first time is like, man, that fucking sucks.
I was almost shit myself the first time I ran. So
it
was rough.
I mean, yes. And then you went back, right? So there was something about it that made you decide to like do it again. I think our conversation went in a little bit of a different direction than maybe we started off, but I think this is fabulous. I think I didn't know the, you know, depression aspect and like getting into CrossFit and stuff. And I think that that's really cool that you shared that. But if you had, you know, from your physical therapy perspective, if you had like one, two, or three different pieces of advice that, you know, you would say to anybody and everybody about longevity, keeping their body moving so that maybe they don't have to come see you, or when they should come see you, or, you know, how people should like the number one, two, and three pieces of advice that you would give to people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think pain guidance is helpful. You know, I think we talked about it already where, you know, if it hurts and it just kind of goes away, yeah, keep moving, you know. But if it hurts and it starts to linger, you know, things kind of linger. There's a lot of opportunity there, you know. Even just Maryland itself it's called an open access state. You can see any physical therapist anytime without a referral. Like, you just go and knock on their door or call them up and say, hey, you know. Now, your insurance might say something different, right?
My insurance company disagrees. But your business now, you don't take insurance, right? So you're doing more or less a private practice, which I think a lot more. I personally think that that's opening the opportunity for a lot more people to do it, because I think when it comes down to it, a lot of times what you charge is not much different than I would pay for my copay.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Definitely. And like, even for myself, my wife, like she's going to do like all this hormone testing because, you know, she wasn't getting answers. Like it's, you know, your A1C looks fine. Your cholesterol looks fine. Good. I'll see you later. But she doesn't feel great, you know? Mm-hmm. So is there something else that we look? So yeah, we you know, we're working with like functional medicine doctors. And, you know, I'm gonna get myself tested for stuff just to make sure I'm optimizing my health, right? Not just feeling good. And that's the thing. Like, I think with joint issues, muscle pain, like the ways for you to optimize yourself, like, yeah, keep moving. You know, you take some time and make sure all your joints are moving. Are your knees straightening? Can you get good hip internal rotation? Does your back extension look good? You know, if those are like things that you can't, you know, or things that maybe you were doing before that you can't now, like, yeah, like get it checked out. You know, a lot of people offer like just screenings and it's most of them are free. You know, I do it once a month at Crofton Yoga, and I'll probably offer it at my clinic at some point where people just come in with questions and ask. Cause I don't know how to change my oil. So I take it to someone to change it. You know? Right. I could probably learn. I could go to YouTube and figure it out.
I have zero interest in changing my own oil. So I'm going to take it to the expert.
I don't have time for that. You know?
I don't have time for it. I don't want to do it. That's not even money I care to save. I'm just going to pay somebody to do it.
Exactly. So why gamble with your health? Like, I mean, just like think about hip issues, right? If you're sitting more, well, the research shows like that shortens up your hip flexors. And the tighter your hip flexors are, the more compression that causes at the hip.
Yep.
More compression means, lack of blood flow. It means lack of blood flow also means degeneration. You know, your body knows if you're not using it. And if you're not using it, then it starts to break it down and use it for other things. Yep. Your body's very smart and very efficient. If you're sitting all day and your back's more in lumbar flexion than extension, it's going to get stiff that way. So when you have to do a deadlift, of course it's going to hurt. Your hamstrings are tight. Your hip flexors are tight. Your lower core is weak, and you try to pick up something heavy, yeah, it's going to hurt your back. Mm-hmm. So everyone's different. You know, everyone has their way that they're going to approach life and their physical fitness. But there's, you know, sometimes getting a little bit of advice from someone is actually free, you know. So avoid the YouTubes, avoid the Google, Dr. Google. There are lots of good stuff out there, but it's all the bad stuff, you know, lots of bad stuff.
Oh, yeah. I do lots of Googling, and I try a lot of things on my own, and then I'm like, I can't do this on my own. And then that's when I find you. And the dry needling to me is, like, I think one of the best inventions on the planet. If somebody hasn't done it, I highly recommend. Cupping has been great, but dry needling, people ask me, what is dry needling? I always said, well, it's acupuncture without the chi.
Sure.
There's no chi involved. There's nothing relaxing about it. And it's usually a little bit more painful for a reason. Actually, just real quick, we have a couple of minutes. So what is dry needling if somebody hasn't done it before, and why should they get it, and what's the benefit?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you got to treat your muscles like organs. You know, they have a metabolic process to it. They also have a referred pain pattern. So, you know, just like your organs, any organ, say you get a heart attack. There's a natural kind of pain progression to it, neck, shoulder, back pain. And it doesn't mean your neck, shoulder, back hurts. It's just your heart also has sensation tied to those areas of your body as a warning. So muscles, like any organ, sometimes they're tender to the touch, painful. They can also refer pain in different areas. And that's called the trigger point. You naturally have trigger points because that acetylcholine just kind of sticks around. It's a neurochemical that helps to kind of contract muscle. But if that muscle is overstimulated or over tight, or maybe you did something that, you know, kind of tweaks the joint a little bit, you know, it's a natural mechanism to try to protect it. Or an efficiency. So someone who has like chronic neck tightness or chronic upper trap tightness, you know, maybe just in that position a lot. So, you know, you could massage it. You could try to dig it out, try to get into it, but sometimes that's painful in itself. So a needle, acupuncture needle, usually between 20 millimeters to 60 millimeters in diameter, you go in and touch that trigger point, and it just releases that acetylcholine to get that muscle to relax. Super cool. You know, I used to do like the manual kind of digging that area a lot, and I knew I couldn't do that all my life. So learning how to dry needle and you know, just getting the experience in it and working with different patients over the last couple of years, I mean, hands down, it's like the quickest way to improve pain and symptoms and just kind of get the muscle feeling like it should. Mm-hmm. And that's where the healing takes place, right? If the muscle's so tight, well, you know, what's tight is the blood flow to that area. Mm-hmm. And if I can get some more blood flow to the area, get the muscle loosened up, it just optimizes your healing. And then here, these are exercises. These are things that I want you to do to get the blood flow to it, to move it. Just a tool, just like anything else, you know, it's just a tool. Yeah, that's kind of what dry needling is to me.
I love it. I think it's fantastic. I've had some really good results from it in different perspectives, but my favorite is with what I call the little baby jumper cables. So when you hook me up like Frankenstein and you put the needles in and then you clip the little jumper cables to it, and then there's a, you know, we do the stim at the same time, and you can just feel like everything, whatever. And then of course, I have had some dry needling experiences where, not from you, but from somebody else, it was so needed, and the muscle was so tight in my quad and in my groin. It was after my hip surgery, and there was so much scar tissue and all of that stuff after that. I literally felt like somebody took a baseball bat to my thigh after every single session. Like, it felt like it hurt, but it loosened it up. Yeah. Like, it was like it needed, again, that kind of like got the blood flowing, and over time that like really ended up making a difference. But so I'll definitely put in the notes how to get in touch with you, but you so that if people are interested in reaching out to you, you are in Annapolis. Native PT, right?
Yep.
Did I get the whole name right? Native PT.
Yep.
In Annapolis, out of a really cool sort of training facility there.
Yeah.
In the Annapolis area. But so I'll put your contact information. But anything else you want anybody to know before we sign off?
No, I just want to shout out to you, because, you know, just seeing what you do over the years, how you transform people, you know, like, it's amazing to see. And I've always admired you from, you know, your coaching standpoint. So, you know, it's always been a pleasure to work with you. And, you know, you definitely kind of pushed me in the right direction, being a small business owner and doing your own thing. I'm like, man, Tina is such inspiration. So,
Thank you. That means a lot, actually.
I think you just need to, you know, just shout it out more. You know, going into the wellness space, like, I'm so happy for you, because, you know, I feel like the body transformation is so much harder. Like, you're doing the bodybuilding thing. I mean, even for myself, like, growing up, you know, men get that same feeling too, where my body's not good enough, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, you see these pictures in magazines and movies and you're like, how do I look like Thor? You know?
Oh yeah. I wouldn't mind looking like Thor.
But, you know, then you realize, like, that's temporary. Like, you can't look like that all the time. And the way it's portrayed in media and especially social media, like, yeah, like, that's like the male standard. No, it's not, you know? So, you know, getting people to be able to achieve that thing and then realize that, you know, it's not something you keep. It's just something that, you know, you have and achieve for a little bit of time for the show. And then, you know, that there's a cycling process. It's amazing to see. So I'm so happy to, you know, reconnect and kind of get the chat again. So.
Yeah, this was, I appreciate, because I have to, I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for the really great doctors, you know, like I call, you know, like I said, the put Humpty Dumpty back together again, and the great physical therapists and, you know, that I've had. I keep coming back to you. I think at one point I was like, you weren't even certified to do the dry needling yet. And I was like, well, I'm just going to come to your house then, because we happen to live in the same neighborhood. And I know that was probably weird, but I was like, I'm just desperate and I don't feel like getting a referral and I need to just get something done. But yeah, so I appreciate that from you. And this was a really fun conversation. I hope other people like it. And I think that if people have questions, or maybe we could do a Q&A and do another podcast if people have specific questions, maybe a live thing that we could do in the future if people are interested in that, because I think you have a wealth of knowledge on, and most people that are listening to this podcast are interested in movement in some way, shape, or form, whether they're bodybuilders or weekend warriors or otherwise. So I think you have a lot to offer. So I'm excited for you and your new endeavor.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. I love doing this stuff. I mean, getting the info out there, and if we can change people's minds, like, hell, like, yeah, like, let's do it.
Yep.
You know, about movements, about pain, about joint issues. I mean, there's so much bad info out there. So I'm happy to connect.
Yeah. And I have a really great book recommendation for you and for listeners if they want to read it. But Dopamine Nation.
Yeah.
You read that one?
It's on my list. It's on my list.
Put that one on your list with The Body Keeps the Score.
Yeah, that's another one. You're my second patient that's recommended to me. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one. It'll just give you a different perspective on The Body Keeps a Score, give you a different perspective on the hurt versus harm, right? So
sure.
And you know, there's some other books related to that. And you know, a lot of the psychosomatic pain, trauma-based pain, physical pain that is not actually related to injury, right? And sort of understanding that. So again, getting back to the mental aspect of things, because pain is always in your head, but not in your head the way people try to make you seem, right? That's where pain is always in your head. So pain is not actually at the pain point. It happens in your brain. But yeah, I think you'll like those books. And I think our listeners will too, if they take a listen. Do you know our sign off? Have you listened to enough of the podcast to know my sign off?
No,
you don't. Did you not get to the end of the podcast? Did you fast forward through that part?
I was doing some yard work and taking down Christmas trees. Dad's life.
It goes, don't get weird. Use your head. It'll all be okay.
Nice.
It means just think about what you're doing. Yeah. All the things we just talked about. It's all in your head, right? It's all mental. Don't get weird about it. Just think about it. And it'll be okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And we will say bye for today. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Coaching and Cocktails, the podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you like to stream your favorites. Bye.